طفلة تمتطيه قوس قزح، طفلة.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, the weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's brutal occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program features the Palestinian voice, the Palestinian narrative, from a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. And that is why it is so important that we present it each week on This Week in Palestine. This is your host, John Roberts. It is election season. Of course, nowadays, it always seems to be election season. But because the manipulation of our election system is the focus of the Republicans, the very integrity of the election system is in question. So election coverage continues to dominate the news cycle. On This Week in Palestine, we particularly follow elections that might have an effect on moving the Palestinian narrative in the halls of Congress. And this morning we feature a Mondo Weiss podcast conversation moderated by Dave Reed, focusing on an analysis of the current primary elections, and in particular the behind-the-scenes influence AIPAC and the Israeli lobby are having on the process. The conversation is between Mondo Weiss's Michael Aria, Beth Miller of Jewish Voice for Peace, and political analyst Peter Fell. We begin with Dave Reed framing the issue.
Welcome to the Mondo Weiss Podcast. I'm your host, Dave Reed. At Mondo Weiss, we cover the movements, activists, and policymakers who affect the struggle for freedom in Palestine. We're about halfway through the primary election season in the United States. This cycle has seen an explosive growth in spending from political action committees tied to pro-Israel lobby groups, such as the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, or AIPAC. In this episode, Michael Aria and I speak with Beth Miller from JVP Action and campaign consultant Peter Feld about how this direct campaign engagement from Israel lobby groups is affecting elections.
Thanks. Thank you both again for joining us. I wanted to ask, in the wake of Stevens beating Levin in Michigan, there's been a lot of coverage of AIPAC spending. I guess through United Democracy Project, there's Super PAC, which was launched last year. I think close to $5 million on this race, and Stevens won by about 20 points, I believe. This week at MondoWise, we've been covering some recent polling on the subject of Israel. It's something we cover a lot, and over the last couple of years, we've seen this trend where Democratic voters are definitely not aligned with the lawmakers that they elect to office on the issue of Palestine or Israel. I think the latest poll, which is from the University of Maryland that we wrote about, says that most Democratic voters do not lean towards Israel as much as President Biden or their respective members of Congress. There's also a very interesting part of that poll that says most Democratic voters who have heard of BDS and are aware of what its goals are tend to support the movement by pretty staggering rates. I think it was like 33 to 10 or something. I was wondering if you could address this disconnect between pro-Israel lawmakers and the views of Democratic voters before we got to actual AIPAC intervention. And maybe it connects directly, and that's what we're prepared to discuss. But I'm just wondering if either of you had any thoughts about that disconnect.
We've been seeing this for a long time, and it's really a growing trend that the Democratic base is very clearly increasingly moving toward more and more sympathy toward Palestinians and demanding and calling for the U.S. government to back off from this, quote, unwavering, ironclad, partnership and support for the apartheid state that is Israel. The more that Palestinian voices have been entering into American discourse and media, and the more that the progressive movement in particular has been embracing the Palestinian rights movement as just one part of its platform, the more it's becoming clear that the Democratic Party, and in particular kind of the establishment Democratic Party, Democratic leadership, is just deeply out of touch with what its voters actually care about or want on this issue. And I think there is any number of reasons that that's the case, but certainly, you know, it's not different than so many other issues that we see, right? Like this political system that we live in, the electoral system in the US is broken, right? That's not, we all know that. We are living in a broken electoral system where, unfortunately, what voters want is not always the top priority of what our government is doing. There are big lobby groups that spend millions and millions of dollars to influence what members of Congress will do. And that's not just on this issue, that's on so many other critical issues, climate change, gun control, et cetera, the list goes on. And this is no different than that. And I think that groups like AIPAC, groups like Christians United for Israel, all these other pro-apartheid groups have been kind of lobbying in this way for so long, not to mention groups like Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, Boeing, that are making lots and lots of money off of selling weapons to the Israeli government and making money off of the U.S.-Israel partnership. All these forces are what are kind of exerting control over what Democratic leadership and the Democratic establishment is saying and doing. And so in a way that's really clarifying and should be clarifying for the Democratic base, which is just that it's about our people power getting louder and getting stronger and making clear to really progressive candidates that if they want to do something that is reflective of what the base wants, they need to actually listen to what these polls are showing voters are saying, which is overwhelmingly that we should be backing up and stepping away from support for the Israeli government and Israel's oppression of Palestinians.
Okay, I agree with all of that. And I think the work Beth is doing and the work that JVP and JVP Action are doing are a big part of the solution. But I would add to what Beth said in this regard that, yes, we live in a broken democracy, in a broken system, and often it's very, very hard to create the linkage between what people want and what happens on many issues. We see it with healthcare for all. We see it, you know, in the insurance industry. We see it with climate. We see it with, you know, hopefully we will see some pushback now, and we're starting to, on abortion, but that's been a key example of where the political system delivers the opposite of what people want, taxation of the wealthy and the like. But I think beyond that, I think one of the things is that as a campaign pollster, my background is not just looking at what people agree or disagree with, because you can only take that so far. In order to really like take the support, the reservoir of support that Palestine has to the bank and make it count, the issue kind of has to be on the table, and maybe be on the table in a way that it hasn't, because voters are normally not as engaged with foreign policy. So you can take a position as an elected official that perhaps goes against what your constituents want and maybe get away with it. And that's all the more so if candidates aren't putting this issue on the table. And so one thing I did this cycle was to test Palestine, not just as a, you know, do you support or oppose, you know, say conditioning aid or some of the other things that have been measured, but to test whether Palestine works as a voting issue on behalf of a candidate that was willing to campaign on it. And I think the problem is in the Levin race and in other races, the big problem is AIPAC doesn't want to put Israel on the table because they know they're vulnerable, and they know that they know very well they're out of step with people. So all their attacks are not on Israel. They're, you know, they pick other issues, and they also pick targets like Levin, who are in some ways already at a disadvantage. I mean, I think it's not insignificant that Levin chose to run in a district against another incumbent, Haley Stevens, who represented a lot more of the new district than he had. So I think she represented 20% more of of that district than he had. So, you know, it's quite possible he would have lost without any intervention by AIPAC. So to some extent, they're piling on for fear to make, you know, to, as a show of strength, to show people what they're willing to spend, not against somebody like Rashida Tlaib, who's, you know, is a steadfast supporter of Palestine, but to somebody like Levin, who is a big Zionist and a former, as he pointed out, synagogue president. So I think that you know, and he didn't want to put this issue on the table either. And, you know, in a big way, I mean, I think that there was expressions within the campaign and on social media, you know, that were in line with his positions, you know, his more dovish positions on Israel. But, you know, to really raise these issues in people's minds, you have to devote advertising budget to the issue, and that's not always perceived by these candidates as being in their own interests. So it just doesn't get engaged.
So there are now several political action committees supporting candidates that are far more critical of Israeli government policies. JVP Action, Beth, you're with them, and a few others. What is the spending difference, though, between these PACs and what AIPAC and their affiliated political action committee or similar political action committees are spending?
The spending difference is massive, right? I mean, we're seeing the numbers that we're seeing from groups like AIPAC PAC and Democratic Majority for Israel's PAC and, you know, all these other groups are overwhelming. The fact that AIPAC is dropping millions and millions of dollars, right? Like, we're looking at over $4 million dropped on the Michigan 11 race, a midterm congressional primary. That is eye-popping numbers. That is really staggering. And, you know, the reason they're doing that is what Peter was just speaking about, right? They are dropping money to run attack ads on candidates who in many ways are already vulnerable. And their attack ads aren't on Israel, right? They are just flooding money with races where they don't talk about Israel, but they drop millions of dollars. Then they claim the victory was about Israel. And then they use that fear and that bullying tactic to try to silence future candidates with the threat of a similar money drop. That's just the way they operate. That's really not a secret. The way that JVP Action and JVP Action PAC operate is radically different. Our way of operating is entirely about people power, and it's about mobilizing the grassroots base, and it is about showing that what people want is to push for Palestinian rights and to support candidates who are willing to try to end U.S. complicity with the Israeli apartheid government. And so the way we're operating is by getting our people to hit the phones, by getting our people to knock doors, and to raise grassroots dollars, because that is also critical. And we can't be naive about the fact that candidates need money to run these campaigns. And so we're raising money. I mean, I think that, but the number, the difference in the numbers is vast, because we just simply don't operate by thinking that we can buy elections. That's just not the way we do it. We believe that we should just be expanding and lifting up the will of what people actually want and using that to mobilize for candidates. I mean, one perfect example of this is, you know, the Rashida Tlaib race that Peter also just mentioned, right? Like, AIPAC won in Michigan 11, or rather Stevens won in Michigan 11 with AIPAC support, when they dropped over $4 million to campaign not on Israel at all. And now they're going to say, this is their new phrase, right? That being pro-Israel is, quote, good policy and good politics, which is just ridiculous, because it's, first of all, it's not good policy to have ironclad support for a violent apartheid regime. I don't know in what world that's good policy, but also because it's not good politics, because they didn't win on that issue. Whereas one district over, one of our endorsed candidates, Rashida Tlaib, who is proudly pro-BDS, is probably unparalleled in her support for Palestinian rights, won on a grassroots campaign. And we were out there knocking doors for her, making calls for her, raising grassroots dollars for her. On the same night, Cori Bush, another pro-BDS candidate in Missouri, also won. And they both won in landslide victories, because their positions are popular and because voters actually respond when they see progressive candidates who are just unwavering in their politics being driven by their values. And so it's just really an entirely different theory of change between the way that different groups are operating and supporting candidates.
Peter, what are your thoughts on the discrepancy in spending power?
Well, I think that it's there. And as a political consultant who works for progressives, you know, not always where Palestine is at the forefront, but I'm, you know, almost always outspent. And frankly, Democrats are often outspent, considering that a lot of this AIPAC money is Republican money, you know, coming into Democratic primaries. But, you know, it's people like Paul Singer, Bernie Marcus, you know, who otherwise donate heavily to Republicans, you know, and I've always believed that the way you deal with being outspent, number one, is what Beth said, people power. You've got to put that forefront. But media is also important. Paid channels are very important. And I think that superior messaging can often win when you're outspent. And that's been the story of my whole time in politics, not just on this issue. And I think that we have to take that lesson. That's why I keep advocating, just like Beth says about Rashida being unapologetically pro-Palestinian. Now, she was in a district that, you know, where I think the voters are clearly aligned with that. But even in a district like the one that I just worked in, where we didn't win, but we were proud to have JVP Action's endorsement for Haweda Araf, which is a different kind of a district, which is considered the prototypical moderate district. It's Macomb County, which ex-Bill Clinton pollster Stan Greenberg identified as like the birthplace of the Reagan Democrat back in the 80s. And in this district, we found that 2/3 of the voters thought that cutting off aid to Israel, when we explained it as a campaign message — this is different, I should side note to your listeners who may not understand that campaign polling is a little different from public polling, that, you know, either that the University of Maryland does that you were just referencing, or that you see published in a major newspaper. We're often not just testing issues to see whether people agree or disagree with a position, but we're looking to see whether an issue helps us persuade voters in the course of a campaign, whether it's an effective campaign message. And we found that in this suburban Reagan Democrat quote unquote district, 2/3 of the voters said that cutting off aid to Israel because of the war crimes that they commit, as documented by Amnesty International and the United Nations, is a strong reason to vote for a candidate like Haweda Araf. And she had stronger issues yet, because, you know, people care a lot about things that are close to home. But the point is, it's safe. It's safe to take these issues. And my fear is that some of the candidates like Andy Levin, they just can't make these arguments. They can't really highlight the war crimes, the apartheid, because that's not really where they are. And so I think that we need more people like Cori Bush and Rashida Tlaib to show that you can actually get elected on these issues. Or we need to, you know, I'll say this as a Democratic campaign consultant, we need to find incumbents who are extremely pro-Israel, frankly, and defeat them on this issue, you know, tie them to the war crimes, the apartheid, the money that they're providing and the money they get, especially in majority minority districts, because I think that the members of Congress respond, and politicians generally respond, to fear, which is what AIPAC is playing. And, you know, I think we need some hardball on our side is what I'll say from my perspective.
That sets up this question that I have, and Michael and I were talking about this before we got on the call. You may have seen the interview that Jewish Insider published today with Marilyn Rosenthal, the director of AIPAC PAC. And for our listeners who don't know, AIPAC is not actually a political action committee, even though it has PAC in its name. They recently started a political action committee that is further confusing, called AIPAC PAC. So Marilyn Rosenthal is the director of that, and she said that the Political Action Committee allows them, presumably the pro-Israel lobby groups, to, quote, clearly define who is and is not pro-Israel. And that is the objective, essentially, of what we're trying to achieve. In the same article, Rob Bassin, who's the CEO of the United Democracy Project, which is another large pro-Israel political action that's been spending heavily this cycle, he went on to acknowledge that they're not, as you said, Peter and Beth, they're not running advertising or messaging about candidates' positions related to Israel. So for whom are they defining this? It seems to me that they're defining these lines around what is and is not pro-Israel for the donor class and the politicians. Do you think that it's going to have, I suppose the desired effect is to just dissuade people from running at all who may want to champion Palestinian rights? Do you think that it's having an impact?
It's a great question. Okay, my real answer is that we're going to have to wait and see what the impact is, right? Because this is the first cycle where AIPAC's new PACs are really out and about. I think that there's two possible outcomes. The first, which I think for the record, which I think is not what's going to happen, but what I think AIPAC hopes will happen, is that they will scare progressive candidates away from taking stances on Palestinian rights. And what I want to be clear on here is that AIPAC's definitions here are very much aligned with how AIPAC has always operated. Basically, if you are a progressive candidate who believes that Palestinians are human beings, you're probably too far left for AIPAC, right? AIPAC, they've been around since 1963, and their stances have been stalwartly pro-ethnic cleansing, pro-apartheid, and anti-democracy. They exist to defend the Israeli government. And so their definitions of what is quote-unquote pro-Israel are people who are in line with that. And that's what they are trying to basically say. They are saying if you in any way even do something as mainstream as critiquing the occupation, right? Like Peter was saying, Andy Levin identifies as a liberal Zionist. He is a J Street candidate. He is not a candidate of the Palestinian rights movement. But simply being anti-occupation or criticizing the occupation, which really is a mainstream position, AIPAC is trying to make that seem fringe and bad. That's their goal. However, I think that the second possible outcome here is what actually we are seeing happen and what will happen. And that is that the opposition, groups like AIPAC, groups like Democratic Majority for Israel, groups like Pro-Israel PAC, NORPAC, all these groups are overstepping. And they are actually attracting way more negative attention than they've attracted in the past because they are so clearly flooding these races with money and undermining what voters actually want through the process. And their positions are so extreme, for example, endorsing insurrectionists, that they are even raising the ire of Democrats who wouldn't otherwise care about the issue. And so, you know, for the movement, what's important then is that we seize on this opportunity and that we do what I think Peter said, which is that we start playing hardball too, right? Like, we need to make clear that AIPAC is acting as AIPAC has always acted. They are taking hawkish, pro-apartheid stances, and they are using bullying and overwhelming bullying and fear tactics to try to control the outcome of what our government is going to do by acting in the way that all lobby groups act. And they, again, are no exception. And so I think that that's actually going to be the outcome of this. Having said that, it will also require political courage from progressive candidates, and it will require progressive candidates to actually listen to what the polls are saying, which is that most voters want to see more support for Palestinian rights. And what we can't have is progressive candidates who are trying to tiptoe around and find the exact perfect message on Palestine that will keep them off of AIPAC's radar or something like that. Because what we're seeing is that that message doesn't exist. And AIPAC is going to come for you. DMFIPAC is going to come for you, likely if you are anywhere left of them. And so what they need to be doing is doubling down, following their values, and following what most Democratic voters and the progressive movement are actually calling for and will show up for and support and vote for, like we're seeing with Rashida Tlaib, like we're seeing with Cori Bush, like we're seeing with AOC. We're seeing this with all of these progressive candidates. They will show up for you if you are actually just strong on the progressive issues, and that includes Palestine. And I think that that's actually what we're going to see come out of this cycle. But we as activists need to show up to kind of push that forward and make that clear to these candidates.
Yeah, I just, everything Beth just said, and, you know, AIPAC's always been this way. I mean, I think I just recently read on Mondawise that the precursor group of AIPAC, which dates back to 1953, was formed to contain outrage over the Kibya massacre. So I think that impunity, complete impunity, has always been the goal. And it's, I think, escalated. I think, you know, Beth talks about overreach, and it's a really interesting question. Now, because I would say this, we can't yet say that it's overreached because Michael, I think, or Dave, I'm not sure which of you said this, but that the intended audience for all this are the donor class and the political class is exactly right. They're trying to constrain the definition of what's acceptable departure from the quote unquote bipartisan consensus. And so it's very instructive that they make this example of Andy Levin, you know, not somebody who's been like, you know, anti-Israel, you know, but to me, and I say it in this article, Andy Levin protesting that he's like, you know, one of two synagogue presidents in Congress right now and protesting what a great Zionist he's always been and then losing anyway. I mean, to me, it's like, you know, telling a bear that's, you know, that's mauling you to death what a great fan you are of Paddington. Like, you know, they don't want the fig leaf of liberal Zionists anymore. They don't want people like Andy Levin giving, you know, supporting Israel and supporting a democratic Jewish Israel, you know, and a two-state solution and introducing a two-state solution act. I think they have decided, I think in the wake of Trump and the wake of really, to be fair, Biden continuing a lot of Trump's policies, you know, expanding on the so-called Abraham Accords. You know, if you look at what's been happening all year, it's escalating crimes, you know, the non-investigation of Shireen's death, the mounting death toll of kids, and it's horrifying on the West Bank and Jenin and elsewhere. I think that they believe, you know, and getting in places like New York, everybody to line up against BDS. I think they feel like nothing's going to stop them. And we have to show otherwise, you know, with the hardball that we've been talking about. I mean, I read this quote on Twitter, progressive account, and a lot of other people say this, but saying something like, you know, I really think the left should just say the magic words on Israel to make these bad people go away, quote unquote. And they're not going to. And it's the same people that are anti-progressive on other issues. Dan Loeb, who's one of the big funders of AIPAC and was a big funder of the opposition to Rashida, is forming a local PAC in New York to go after progressives, you know, whether Israel is the issue or whether it's policing charter schools and being too pro-tenant. So I think we're going to need some solidarity on this and mm-hmm. some lack, you know, some non-timidity on this.
I have one more question that's actually connected to some responses that both of you have, you know, pointed out the true intent of AIPAC and their history and kind of what they're really doing. Something that we've also covered on the site is this kind of prevailing, I mean, it started even before, you know, AIPAC launched a super PAC. I think, you know, it used to be like a rite of passage that every Democratic presidential candidate had to go to the AIPAC conference. And then you slowly saw them start when it became like a little more toxic a brand, you started to, you know, have people drop out or not attend. But, you know, it wasn't like they were citing Gaza when they were deciding not to go. They were just claiming like schedule conflict or something. And, you know, I've seen in the last couple of weeks, even Bernie Sanders on last Friday during 11 rally made the point that he doesn't think that AIPAC is actually even motivated over Israel. He thought that maybe it was just the issue of big money. And, you know, there was a piece by Robert Reich the other day where he kind of made the same point that he thought that was kind of a red herring and that, you know, their real intent was to kind of keep big money in politics. We've seen like Bill de Blasio had a comment the other day where he wishes, you know, AIPAC would get back to its roots. The implication being that it's like strayed from the path of some like noble cause and gone off and sold out to big money. I'm just wondering what you think of these kind of critiques and their prevalence, because I do see a lot of liberals and progressives criticizing AIPAC, but you know, it's just as one like staggering example, when the North Carolina Progressive Caucus rescinded their endorsement of someone because they took AIPAC money, they identified the fact that AIPAC backed all these January 6th Republicans. But in that statement, they also said, like, oh, all the great work they do in Israel doesn't discount that they back these Republicans. So I'm wondering what you think of those kind of critiques and these kind of statements where, you know, it's presented as if Israel isn't even a factor here. And how do we change those kind of critiques? How do we get the critiques that you're identifying and pushing for to kind of, you know, enter the mainstream when it comes to Democrats and liberals and progressives?
Yes. I mean, I think, you know, to the point, you know, about Dan Loeb and others, I mean, I think, first of all, I would say bring it, because, you know, I mean, I believe it was Alex Salmon who wrote a few weeks ago in the American Prospect that the Democratic establishment is losing control of its primaries. And so it's people they like now, like Andy Levin, like Donna Edwards, who are losing. And so I think to some extent, Bernie's right and Robert Reich is right that this is like a grand opportunity to put big Republican money into Democratic primaries and squash progressives on a host of issues, not just Israel, and make sure that it's Haley Stevens and not Andy Levin, etc. But, you know, they're right. But I would sort of welcome the fact that we're maybe able to leverage some of the horror that people that are not necessarily with us on Palestine, but don't like the Republicans taking over our primaries and don't like support by AIPAC of all these pro-insurrection in election denying Republicans. But yeah, they're, you know, Dan Loeb, who I mentioned before, is, you know, he was behind super PACs that boosted both Andrew Yang and Eric Adams last year in the mayoral race in New York City. And then there were a flood of flyers, some from him and some from like-minded donors, that just trashed legislative candidates in this year's the primaries we've had locally and in last year's primaries actually for city council. And I think that we are going to have to, like, you know, both escalate our own issue and form the strategic alliances. But, you know, I think Beth is, you know, really at the fore, you know, and your group, you know, that I support is really at the forefront of, you know, coming up with the antidote to coming up with the, you know, the people power. And, but we have to call them out. We can't just let, you know, somebody like Bill de Blasio is ill-equipped to fight AIPAC. I said this before about Levin, but, you know, somebody like Bill de Blasio, who always said, my job is to help AIPAC, you know, when he was there, who, you know, who want to say, you know, make it sound like they've strayed from their noble roots when we know what their noble roots, you know, were. I don't think they're the best messengers to kind of, you know, to take the fight to AIPAC. And I think some of our more outspoken candidates are.
I really agree with that. And I think, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you started the question with like the moment of a few years back when people stopped going to, people started pulling back from AIPAC conferences, even if they weren't citing Palestine as the reason. And I think it's good for us to start from that point and just recognize that, you know, AIPAC has been around for decades, but it wasn't until this year that they decided they needed to have an actual PAC and that they needed to be right. able to, in a straightforward way, start getting involved in electioneering and endorsing candidates, et cetera, et cetera. That's not because they never thought about it. You know, it's not like they woke up one day in 2022 and they were like, you know what we should do? We should form a PAC. We never thought about that before. It's because it wasn't until now that they felt like they needed to, right? It wasn't until now that they started feeling like they were on their back foot and that there was growing consensus among voters, among Americans, in particular Democrats, that was pushing them away, and that there was increasing power from the Palestinian rights movement, the broader progressive movement embracing the Palestinian rights movement, that was starting to show up in Congress. And so they were like, okay, we need to grip harder and we need to show up more directly on endorsing candidates and funding candidates, et cetera, et cetera. So I just think it's important for us to, one, you know, like, we are part of a movement and it's important for us because it can feel like we're often losing. So it's important for us to, like, take a step back and see that bigger picture. The fact that these groups, that DMFI even exists as of a few years ago, it's because they felt a need for it to exist because they felt like
right.
You know, this ironclad support for Israel in the Democratic Party, mm-hmm. this Washington consensus was wavering and starting to falter. And so they are trying to lean in more. So that's important for us to keep in mind. And then the second thing I would say is that, you know, I agree with everything Peter just said about like the strategy of this moment is that we as a movement have an opportunity to bring along a movable middle, right? Like liberals, people who otherwise aren't paying attention to Palestine are paying attention to AIPAC for other reasons. And so we need to do our job and go to them and meet them where they are and be like, hey, this is actually about Israel. This is actually about Palestine, and like bring them toward us in this moment. I think that I would really disagree with the things that, you know, Senator Sanders, Robert Reich, certainly what Mayor de Blasio is saying about this not being about Palestine or Israel. I mean, I agree with what Peter is saying about how it in many ways it's not. It's about Republican money. It's about influence. It's about trying to like, you know, get Republican big dollars in on Democratic politics. I believe all of that's true. But ultimately, these groups exist for the sole purpose of promoting U.S. financial support for the Israeli government and the Israeli military and its ongoing oppression of Palestinians. And I think that for us, it is critical, certainly for JVP Action as an anti-Zionist, pro-BDS Jewish group that sees itself in solidarity with the Palestinian movement and accountable to Palestinian leaders who've been leading this movement. I will say that I have been feeling quite frustrated with the fact that AIPAC is at the center of the conversation, but Palestine isn't, and Palestinians aren't in this cycle, which just feels so classic, right? That like in America, we can get it so wrong. And it's fascinating because again, it's like AIPAC will campaign not on Israel, but then they will claim it was about Israel. They will use that as a stick to try to prevent people from talking about Palestinian rights. And ultimately, I think it's just important that we remember that there is one reason that groups like AIPAC exist, because they are a one issue group. That is what that's what their mission statement is. And it's entirely to support the Israeli government. And I think, you know, then it takes us to, again, what we talked about before in this podcast, which is what are we supporting when we support the Israeli government? And that's what we as movement organizations, as activists of this movement, need to bring to the conversation. What's really going on right now is urgent. It's not just that we need to stand up against AIPAC because they are undermining our democracy or they are flooding campaigns with money and kind of drowning out what voters want. All of that is true. But we need to be loud about this because Palestinians are being killed right now. The Israeli government has killed over 60 Palestinians this year alone, including children, including the caught on camera murder of Shireen Abu Akleh. And the Biden administration is doing nothing about it, right? Just last year, it was just May of 2021, that they bombed homes and apartments in Gaza. They are demolishing homes of Palestinians in Musafir Yatta. This is ongoing violence, brutality, ethnic cleansing. And that is, no matter what AIPAC says, no matter what DMFI says, no matter what Bill de Blasio says, like that is what we are supporting when we say we are quote unquote pro-Israel, when we support funding for the Israeli government. And so it's our job as activists to keep that front and center, because that's why the polling shows what it shows. Because when you talk about what's actually happening in Palestine, people don't want to pay for that. They don't want the U.S. government funding that violence. And AIPAC knows that. And that is why AIPAC is freaking out and doing what it's doing. And so I think that that's really when we really take a step back at the core of what's driving what's happening this cycle.
That's so true. And I just really I want to clarify that I do agree with Beth on, you know, it's about Israel, at least in the although I think for the donors, it can be all those things. I mean, somebody like Dan Loeb, who likes charter schools wants over policing and wants Israel, sees no contradiction between supporting AIPAC and then going after progressives on other issues. But I think that, you know, to add to what Beth just said, it's like the Empire Strikes Back. We made a lot of gains, and now they're really clamping down. And I think totalitarian overreaction is kind of their script. It's just the same thing as, like, you know, Ben and Jerry's, you know, having a big battle with them. It's like they can't, going after Levin instead of Rashida is, you know, all about, like, they're freaked out at what we've achieved, and they know that we have the upper hand. But also to echo what Beth said, I think we really need to use this in our message. We need mailers and ads that show these crimes, that show what's happening in Masafer Yatta. We did this for Hueda. We showed her staring down Israeli soldiers in our video and in our direct mail. And, you know, we got somewhere. We quadrupled her support from where we started, even though she didn't win. And we showed that it's safe to bring this up, that it's a plus. And we have to do more of that because otherwise they're going to claim victory. Like, you know, they're going to be able to. If we never put our issues on the table, then we can't say we lost on our issues.
And Peter, I want to clarify too for listeners, Hueda Araf is a co-founder of the International Solidarity Movement. She's a human rights lawyer in Michigan, and she was running in what was an open primary because of the redistricting there, right?
Right. It was, in fact, the seat that Levin could have run in. And I think, you know, he would have cleared the field if he did, and he'd be the nominee and he'd be going, you know. But I think earlier in the year, people thought it's going to be a, you know, very bad year for Democrats and swing seats like this one. And so he elected to take his chances against Haley Stevens. You know, maybe he's regretting that choice now, because he'd be the nominee in district in our district 10, and he'd be going up against John James and, you know, might have a decent shot. So that's unfortunate. But yes,
while she came in fourth, I think out of fifth. And so while she didn't win, you're saying that the Palestine, her support, her activity around Palestine was not a factor in her.
Well, if anything, it was a plus. We saw, I mean, we did increase her support, because she's, compared to the other people, I mean, the gap between second and fourth was very narrow. I mean, she finished basically even with one person who's a city councilor in one part of the district, and well ahead of another candidate, Henry Yanez, who's a former state rep and now a city councilor in Sterling Heights, a big part of the district. So, you know, she held her own. You know, all of them, you know, were way behind the winner, you know, who's a popular former judge and prosecutor in Macomb County. But the point is, regardless of our outcome, we felt that we would get somewhere positive by featuring Palestine in our messaging as a reason to vote for her. And we used it. And I think it was a plus. And I think it would, you know, in this district, every district's got its own unique political dynamics. But I think that in a minority majority district, you know, as I'm saying, if somebody in the future were to challenge Hakeem Jeffries or Richie Torres, who are, like, you know, taunting us and flaunting their lockstep support for Israel, and did kind of like what I think Beth is bringing up to do, which is to depict the war crimes, show people what's happening there, show people that, you know, it's everything. It's the settler violence. It's the mobs of settlers rampaging through Harim al-Sharif and the destruction of Silwan. It's the destruction of Masafer Yatta. It's the constant, you know, the 60 deaths that Beth mentioned. It's the, you know, intentional targeting of whole families in Gaza. You know, it's the detention of, you know, the two crimes that we mentioned in our poll question when we got this result of 2/3 saying it's a strong reason to vote for Hueda, that she wants to cut aid to Israel, were, the targeting of civilians and the detention of children in military prisons. And people don't know that. They would not want their money to go for that. And as long as we are kind of not raising this issue and candidates are going up against AIPAC, but they won't bring this up, then they're going to be kind of defenseless. And I think that's one of the things that has to change.
I want to get a little more from both of you about, I remember I'm struck, Beth, you said that you were talking about AIPAC overreaching. Starting to overreach in the way that they're playing in campaigns. And it makes me think in particular about the Donna Edwards campaign, where Donna Edwards had the support of Nancy Pelosi, easily, I think we'd all agree, the most powerful Democratic politician. Her endorsement typically brings victories, like we saw in Texas with Henry Queller over Jessica Cisneros. But it didn't work with Donna Edwards up against, as Michael, you know, we were talking about that campaign earlier, Glenn Ivey, who defeated her, is really a very weak candidate who had lost several times before running for Congress, and who really had virtually no position on Israel. Even after the endorsement, he really seemed to be kind of almost confused about why he was even being asked about it, but he got the endorsement of these PACs. I'm wondering what you think is going on inside the Democratic Party with leadership like Nancy Pelosi, who has been easily one of the most stalwart allies of AIPAC for her entire career. And yet you have these PACs actually issuing, like she denounced, it was framed as denouncing their involvement in the Donna Edwards campaign. And at least one of them even issued, one of the PACs involved even issued like a rebuttal statement pushing back against Nancy Pelosi, which I found kind of stunning. I'm wondering what both of you think about that inside the Democratic Party at those upper echelons where they've been so deeply tied to AIPAC and the Israel lobby for so many years.
You know, the dynamics of what Nancy Pelosi is thinking of that. I mean, I don't know if it's overreach. Maybe Nancy Pelosi is terrified. Beth, what do you think?
I do not pretend to know what is going on in Nancy Pelosi's mind at any given moment, but I will say probably she is a little terrified. I think everyone on all sides, well, maybe not our side, but, you know, I think that the Democratic leadership is probably quite angry and frustrated in many ways at a lot of AIPAC's decisions, including, again, the endorsement of Republican candidates who are effectively insurrectionists. And I think that AIPAC and, you know, DMFI PAC and all these NORPAC, all these other groups are also very scared and worried about what's happening in terms of the growth of the Palestinian rights movement and our issue becoming more and more popular. So I won't actually pretend, I don't really think I have a satisfying answer to that question. But what I will say is that what matters for us is, can we turn that frustration into actual congressional action on Palestinian rights, right? Like, my concern in all of this is that effectively exactly what you said, former Mayor Bill de Blasio said, that is my fear, right? That people will think something like, oh, AIPAC was so good before, you know, if only they could get back to doing what they were doing and not be involved in these races, then we would all be buddies again. We have to make it, it is our job to make the core issue here, to take advantage of this moment where AIPAC is overreaching in this way, but to make sure that the core issue stays Palestinian rights, Palestinian freedom, Palestinian justice, and an end to U.S. complicity, right? Like, it gets back to what we were saying before, because if the takeaway here is that AIPAC is now doing things that are bad, but they weren't before, we are massively missing the moment, and we are massively missing what is most important here. And so I think that, you know, because what we risk then is another group coming along and just doing, you know, being AIPAC, but not endorsing insurrectionists, for example, Democratic Majority for Israel, which is really just as bad as AIPAC, is essentially an AIPAC front group, but they are only endorsing Democrats. And they are, you know, they're in many ways flying under, they're not getting quite the same attention. Well, depending on the race, they are not getting quite the same attention that an AIPAC is getting. And so I think it's important that we basically try to force someone like Nancy Pelosi to come out of this seeing that what is popular is not unwavering support for Israel. And that's not what her base wants. In the same way that we have had to do with so many other issues, right? Universal healthcare, Green New Deal, gun control, all these things. Like, we just need to be louder and bigger. That's got to be what it is. And it has to be that we come out of this cycle, that we come out of the next year showing Democratic leadership that it's not just about AIPAC's involvement and spending this cycle, but it's also about what they are pushing for. And I think that's really hard. That's going to be hard for us to do, but that's what we as a movement need to try to do.
Yeah, we have to embrace the teachable moment of this. And that's on several different levels, including the Pelosi, I'll say the Pelosi's of the world, but there aren't a lot of Pelosi's, but, you know, people in Democratic leadership for sure. But I think we have to approach it on the other end, on the people end. I mean, I think the thing that I've said is that basically it's ironic, but AIPAC's glass jaw is Israel. That's where they're most vulnerable on their true agenda. And we just have to do what Beth said and keep surfacing it, because otherwise we're just seeding the field, seeding CEDING, the field to them. And frankly, like, Pelosi has already shown, and I mean, maybe Obama is a little bit of a model for this, because Obama was attacked relentlessly by the Israel lobby, especially over the Iran deal. And he got madder and madder, but he kept caving in. I mean, he did during 2014, during the war on Gaza, you know, the profound insult he delivered to the Palestinians and to the Arab community at the White House iftar, if people remember, where he had the Israeli ambassadors, where he stated his support for Israel at the time that they were committing all these war crimes. So I think we have to be realistic that these people are not even, you know, Pelosi and the like, are not easily peeled off of their support for Israel. But then Obama eventually did get mad enough to change the veto policy at Security Council, you know, 2 weeks before he left office, or a month, I can't remember. So there's hope there, but we're going to have to really show, we're going to have to put some points on the board. And I think the way we do it is by being really visible and vocal and unyielding on our issue and on educating the public about what's really happening, all the war crimes that Beth was talking about.
Great. I think that's a good way to wrap up. Peter, Beth, thank you both so much for taking some time today to be with us and talking about your work and the political landscape that we're facing these days.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been great.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was great talking with you all.
You have been listening to portions of Amanda Weiss' podcast analyzing the influence of the Israeli lobby on the current primary elections. Thank you for joining us this morning on This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You'll find us here at 90.3 FM every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Time, where you can also stream us live on your computer at WZBC.org. You can also stream us live on Sunday evenings at KKRN.org at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Please tune in again next week for another edition of This Week in Palestine. This is your host, John Roberts, hoping you will get involved with the struggle to bring justice to the Palestinian people. We will talk again next week.